Hey hotties, have you been missing new Process Party episodes and want more behind the scenes scoops?
It's all over on our Patreon. Our loyal hotties get exclusive episodes, live workshops, and our best unedited and unfiltered conversations for just $10 a month.
And if that's not enough, it's super easy to subscribe and there's no long-term commitment.
Learn more and subscribe at patreon.com/hydc.
Welcome to the Hot Young Designers Club podcast.
I'm Rebecca Plum, your big sister.
And I'm Sean Serha, your GBF.
We're not that hot or that young,
but we believe it's a state of mind that helps us build adaptable and profitable businesses.
We rely on the support of our design besties to get through each day.
So let's explore the emotional, practical, and humorous sides of being interior designers.
Welcome to the club. Hey, Sean.
What's up, Rebecca?
We have Will Brown with us today.
Hey, Will.
Hi, how's it going, Sean? Hi, Rebecca. So excited to be here.
So happy you're here. And we were chatting before we started recording that you're in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yes.
And I was saying that TikTok and Taylor Swift have made me now like somehow watch football.
I know.
Not really, but
it's completely changed the landscape of who's watching the Chiefs. I tell you what.
I swear my whole feed is all about what's Taylor gonna wear to the Chiefs game.
What if this is just wild PR stunt?
We were wondering that too, but I don't know.
It's very elaborate if that's the case.
I know, that's the thing.
And does Taylor need PR? I don't think so.
No, it's like, what if his team or like Kansas City, Missouri was like, this is how we're going to get us on the map. We're going to pick a guy bachelor style. We're going to put it on the map. It's going to be great. Like, it could be a whole thing.
There's definitely conspiracies around that, but
yes.
I believe
won't
it
add
now.
More. I won't add more. Yeah.
That she reminds me, there was that movie. Do you guys remember that movie Soap from way back with Whoopi Goldberg? And this kind of reminds me of what you were saying, like creating all these storylines. That are real or not real, but just to kind of whip up some attention, that sort of thing.
We know it happens.
But I think this is so real. This is real. It's so real. I know.
Yeah, I'm not going to a negative 20 degree football game for PR. I'm sorry. It's only love.
That's right.
Yeah. There's definitely still like you have to be committed to it if you're doing it. And hey, if it works out, bring some much needed tourism and traffic into Kansas City, Missouri. Like,
I'm sure
maybe the next big wave, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the next Nashville.
It is. It really kind of is. I mean, we do actually have a huge arts community here. That's actually why I moved to the Midwest, was to work for Hallmark. And that was my first major corporate gig. And so,
give us the tea. Keep going.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, tell us. Okay, so to start, we jumped into Taylor Swift talk, but tell us.
Oh my gosh.
Tell us where you started, how you got there.
Sure. Okay, so I moved to Kansas City from Atlanta and I went to school in Atlanta and I studied graphic design. That was actually my major. And during our junior year, we had a recruiter come through from Hallmark and I certainly didn't have any interest per se in Hallmark at that time. I was thinking I was going to go more into advertising. And so, but anyways, our professor was like, bring your portfolio in. And so I did. I looked at it. He said, you've got some great potential. Look us up. We'd love to continue chatting with you afterwards. So I was like, yeah, sure. We'll do that. In the meantime, I graduated. I went straight into advertising, which is what I thought I wanted to do. 6 months in, I really recognized that it was kind of a little bit of a backstabbing kind of, a lot of it depends on the agency and such, but it wasn't something I wanted to do. So then I sent my resume out. Hallmark was one of the places. And lo and behold, they actually kept my information on file. So, they fast-tracked me out here and flew me out. And the rest is history because I was I could not believe. It was continuing grad school or something when I moved out because they had so many assets and opportunities just to kind of, just creating a creative environment. And
the training programs.
And you could do rotations. And I was so excited. So I was like, sign me up. So then I moved out and I thought maybe it's going to be 3 years. And I'm still here many, many decades later.
But, I remember, so I started as a graphic designer too. And I remember back in the day, so the 90s, you would look through these books of internships and there was like a printed list of like where you like mail your little resume. And I remember seeing Hallmark in there. I'm like, oh, that would be really an amazing opportunity just because it's like a masterclass in printing. Like they do every single, there's no
everything. You learn everything.
Budget, and then, like foil, die cuts, like all the things all that you like dream about doing as a designer back then.
I know, it's all that stuff. It's and then more. And then, you know, they'd send us out on these amazing trips. So you'd actually go to these letterpress workshops or you'd, you know, they'd fly you to Europe and do all the big shows and stuff. So
they did, they took you to Europe?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, they had different, I've gone to, you know, a lot of the big shows like Maison, Christmas World, a lot of the big shows, just depends on, you know, what part of the company you're working in. But for some of my roles, I definitely did that. But then they also had, I call them like artist sabbaticals, where they would fly teams out to, you know, Monet's garden and they'd be painting for a week or something like that. So those types of experiences, you know, you can't, they just don't do that anymore anywhere, really.
They really
That's wild.
I know. I know. So I that's really so cool. had a wonderful experience with Hallmark, you know. But I also worked in Target in Minneapolis. And so that was a completely different corporate experience. But it was on the other end of the spectrum. But it was so fascinating because it really, in hindsight, I recognize how it balanced me out. You know, Hallmark, as you might imagine, is really about relationship and connecting. So I really learned all about that, the emotional element in sort of brand building. And Target is all about design and, you know, what's new, what's next. And so, so it gave me both ends of the spectrum, really. And I didn't really realize it, but it really set me up for success in terms of how I transitioned into interior design.
And how did that happen?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So one of my roles at Hallmark was as a photo stylist. So I did a rotation into the photo studio and I found that I really enjoyed creating sort of three-dimensional types of spaces out of pretty much like a blank studio space. And I was got to be pretty good at it. So I actually transferred into that area and I continued my training. And I really kind of moved up the ladder. You know, I started out as a designer and then I moved to designer 2, 3, 4. Before I knew it, I was an art director. I was a photo studio manager and that's how I got into leadership. But during that time frame, I started getting recognized for some of that work with some of the photographers that I worked with who were networked outside of Hallmark. Hallmark is so insular in a way, but some of these photographers had connections outside. And so they would hire me to help them on some other projects. So it might be to style for an architectural firm, or then an architectural firm would hire me to help, you know, style a space for their website, that sort of thing. And so it got me exposed to a whole different way of looking at space. And it just kind of grew and I kept it as a side hustle, you know, while I was still doing the corporate gig. And then after a while, I realized I had enough work that I put it on a website. That was the beginnings of my website. And then 2019, that was kind of the year I transitioned. I turned 50 and it was kind of a Hallmark year for me. So I could really think about what was the next chapter. And so left corporate world and transitioned into setting up my own business. And, you know, there's a mixture of, I don't know what I'm doing, but there's a lot of passion there. And let me tell you, that's probably a really good balance because if I knew now what I knew, didn't know then, I don't know that I would have done it because there's so much that I did not account for. Oh my gosh. But, you know, it's been 5 years and I'm still here. So
congratulations. You
know, thanks. Yeah, I know. But that's kind of how I transitioned into interiors. Yeah.
That's wild that you said that. You don't know if you would do it if knowing what you know now, because we've frequently have said, I'm glad I didn't, because I probably would have scared myself out of it or talked myself out of it. Or I never would have even made the first attempt because, you know, you let yourself get psyched out of stuff and then you realize, oh, actually, I'm glad I did. I just don't, I know that I probably wouldn't have jumped in the deep end, you know, knowing what we know about our industry. It's challenging.
There's also no way to prepare though. So if you're out there listening, we talked about newbies a while ago. Don't think you have to prepare more because there's so much you can't prepare for. And we talk about this a lot, like emotionally, especially. I've learned so much about my personality and the way I work in this job more so than the 50 other jobs I had before. We have to do so much.
Yeah.
Gosh, I know. But
what's like the main focus of what you're doing now in interior design?
So it's interesting because when I went into my business, it's 2019. So as we all know, 2020 was the pandemic. So a year in, and then here we are, a pandemic. And then it was like at a standstill. Fortunately, I was able to pivot and go online. And so I started doing consultations, but I realized it was a culmination of the pandemic and sort of being sort of sequestered. Then there was also, as you might remember, there was a lot of turmoil happening in terms of Black Lives Matter. So a lot of that stuff was affecting me emotionally. And I felt, how can I give service beyond just, you know, creating, you know, beautiful space? And now that I can't even do that and I have to do it online, what can I really do? So I kind of thought about it for a while and I realized, you know, I've always had this interest in feng shui, but I've never really pursued it. So what is that about? And so I started, and it's so interesting, like you start setting a course and all of a sudden, you know, it's that phenomena, you know, you start looking for something and then all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere. And then all of a sudden I was starting to see signs about feng shui. And then it led me to this school. It's called the Mindful Design Feng Shui School out of New York City. And it was an online community. And it was perfect because it provided a way for me to kind of focus some of my energy and my time towards something that I felt was going to be beneficial to not just myself as in some of what I was going through mentally, but also how that could improve clients' spaces as well. So it was a mutual benefit, I felt. So I went through the certification course for it. And so it's become an integrated part of my service. And before it was an additive, but now I've made it more of an integrated part of my service. And I also feel like in sort of the pool and the world of interior designers, it's important to niche down and to kind of find ways to, you know, brand yourself or sort of make yourself stand out in some regard. And so for me, it seemed like a natural thing. Since I was doing it intuitively, I think having taken the course, it gave me the language and the confidence to be able to make it part of my business. And that's kind of what I've done. And so I'm really ramped up in terms of making that more of how I approach design. So
did you know feng shui principles before you did that? Or you're saying you just kind of had a feeling for like how a space felt?
Yeah, it was more intuitive. So it was more about the feeling and how I felt in a space. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as I was saying before, when I was starting to build spaces as a stylist, I think part of it was in some level beginning there, where I would start with nothing. And then you're literally bringing in every element to create a room and how that room was feeling and then how it looked on camera. And does it look real? And does it feel cozy? Does it evoke feelings of a Christmas, you know, type of whatever the project might be? But I felt, you know, that was, I didn't always feel like the feeling translated with some clients. Might need a little bit more concrete descriptions and how to work.
Like they didn't want to hear, I'm feeling the energy.
Yes.
In space.
Yes.
Like
yes.
A little too woo-woo for it's a lot of people.
They want to know that it's guided by something instead of just, this is my spiritual energy as a designer. Feng Shui provides a lot more credibility because it's been studied and maintained. And
absolutely. You
know, and I totally feel the same way about spaces, but how are clients receiving the idea of feng shui is.
Feng shui, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I try to do in my questionnaire, I try to find out where they are with it and their level of understanding. If they have a curiosity, it's really more about that. So if they have a curiosity and they're open to it, then, you know, I'll go a little deeper. But I always try to meet them where they are. And I think that's an important part of feng shui. Mm-hmm. You never want to impose it. And because everyone is so different in terms of, it's not like a one size fits all. And like, I'm going to come in and transform your space and we're going to do A, B, C, and D, and then it's going to be done. And the thing about feng shui is it's not about the space. It really starts with the individual and what is important in that moment in time for that individual. And then that energy, you know, obviously translates into their space. So in order for them to optimize and get the most out of that space and what we're working around, then it's the harmony of working with both. And so, you know, it's questions about, you know, health and well-being. It's questions about the importance of partnerships, relationships, new beginnings, knowledge building. Things that are really all about elements and aspects of one's life, and then really honing in on what's important right now for you. Mm-hmm. And so once I understand that, then I can go a little deeper into that specific area of their life. And then it's amazing how that starts to really put together for me kind of a almost like an outline in a way for the project itself. So for example, I had a feng shui design session this past week, and we were meant to start and do something in the living room. But after this sort of time consulting with the client, we completely went to the opposite room at the other end of the house. And it was what she needed at the time. And that was so impactful for her to walk away with that experience and knowing that, you know, she now has a sense of what she can do inside of those spaces to really activate and enhance her life and living inside of those spaces. And that's really, I think, when feng shui is at its best.
Because that makes sense. I was wondering, like, the principles, they're pretty static, right? There's not multiple ways to do the same thing, are there?
For example,
I don't know, like putting a bed in, under a window.
Oh. So there's, you know, what we have, let's just use the bedroom as an example, because that's a pretty easy one. And most bedrooms are kind of square. You know, there are some what we call methods of minor addition or mundane adjustments that we can make into a space like a bedroom. And so generally speaking, you want to put the bed in what's called command position, which means that you have, as you're lying in bed, you can see the door. You can see the window and you have a line of sight to who's coming towards you. And oftentimes you have to make adjustments if there's no other wall or way to kind of put a bed and it has to be on that same wall as the door, which is not optimal. Then you have to make adjustments through like mirrors and other things that you can kind of adjust so that it can kind of puts the room back in harmony. But there's more than one way to do it. And it really has to be what the client or that homeowner is comfortable doing. For example, crystals and hanging crystals. I mean, not everybody wants to hang a crystal, you know, into the room. So, you know, maybe it's other ways of thinking about things that reflect, you know, maybe it's shiny, highly metallic metal chrome type of surfaces. Maybe it's mirrors. Maybe it's other things that you can create that reflect that kind of has that intention behind it. So, we have to be creative about how we solve that. So there is, I wouldn't say there's any one way, but there's definitely tools in the box that we can start.
I see. So when you're working with a client that's not, I don't know, they're not like really that interested in the principles of feng shui, are you just automatically kind of, when you say you're integrating, are you doing it? I'm going to put a mirror over here because I want to get that reflection and I don't need to overly.
Yeah, I don't have to go back. I don't have to take them back 5,000 years to the principle and where it started. But, you know, it's really about
time.
So what's about
it?
But
you're doing it. But you're doing it for them.
We're doing it. And then I do explain why we're doing it. And I just make it more practical as far as why. And, you know, oftentimes that's all that's needed. And again, if they don't want that, then we don't force it either. So,
but a lot of them make sense. There's things that just feel weird. Like it feels weird to have your back to the door in an office. Nobody wants to do that. Like you want to see the door in the window.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it makes common sense.
Yeah. And I always feel like that's an easy way to kind of get someone to start to understand the power of it. It's, you know, have you ever entered a space or a room or was even seated in a restaurant where you felt like your back was to the aisle or something like that, and you just felt uncomfortable, you just weren't quite, you know, settled? Well, that's the idea, the energy that you're affected by. And so I always like to personally, you know, make sure that when I enter a room or a restaurant, you know, I put myself in command so I can kind of have a view. That's why I like to say, I get there first. I get to pick the seat. Yes. But
it's also built into sort of the sociology. Sometimes even weird things like, I'm sure they didn't know about it. Once upon a time, the good manners was that like the gentleman would take the worst seat at a table. So that way women would be able to, you know, the ladies would be able to see the room, enjoy the view, but also to be able to be visible for society to see her or that she's out, you know, and people are recognizing that she's there. And the guy was, you know, the gentleman was less important in that. Yeah. And then you think, some of this we've already been doing. It's just, we didn't realize it also overlapped with these principles of feng shui like you're saying, placing in command. A lot of designers might associate that with how we create focal point and that becomes the command of the room. But it's there's relation to that I think the language overlaps.
Yeah.
And it's not as counterintuitive as people might think of, oh, now I have to live completely different because I'm going to adopt this principle. It's
right.
It's not like a religion. You know, you don't have to convert.
No, you don't. Yeah. And that's important, I think, to also let people know it's a philosophy, it's a practice. It's not religion, you know. And, you know, there's multiple schools of feng shui too. So the thing, I practice BTB, which is a newer style that kind of came to the US, I would say in the early 80s, by Professor Lin Yun. And it's a little bit more adapted to Western culture. It has what's known as the Bagua map. So it's literally a map that I can place over a floor plan. And that starts to, and it's called sort of the organic, the moving map, so that at the floating map, so that you can adjust it and move it based on the floor plan. And so that it's very different. So every house and every project is very different in terms of where you lay it. And you always lay it based on the front door and where that falls on the floor plan. It's kind of where you overlay the map. And then you can start to analyze the space to see what spaces are missing. You know, what's there an additional amount of? So, and just to give you a little bit of a background on this Bagua map, There's nine quadrants in a Bagua map, and they each hold meaning. And so when you lay this over the floor plan, those sections start to stand out. So, my gosh, it's interesting to note that the dining room falls in, you know, the benefactor area. What could that mean? So I'm analyzing that in my head. I don't always have to say that out loud. But based on our consultation and the area of their lives that they're interested in sort of enhancing or amplifying, that I will find that area on the Bagua map on the floor plan. And then we'll start to really kind of start to talk about things that we could do to enhance those areas. And it's interesting because homeowners really start to open up and share with you things that have nothing to do necessarily with the home or the plan, but things that are happening in their lives, and that you start to make those connections to actually the space.
Interesting.
So you put a little more attention maybe in the areas, or I guess
you'll
fix the areas that they are trying to work on. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of it. It's like you're making adjustments in some of those areas. And, you know, sometimes some of these adjustments require activity on part of either myself or the homeowner. So again, meeting them where they are, I might suggest things that we can do to a space to, for example, do a space clearing. If a room hasn't been used, there's static energy in that space, we need to clear that space out so there could be an activity that we can do to clear the space. So it can be very interactive for the homeowner to help energize or re-energize that space. And the more that they can do it, the more they can enact it themselves versus me doing it. You know, I can help guide it, but a lot of times it's really about them doing the work. So
what would an activity like that look like?
So it might be, there's one that I like to do. It's called it's with oranges. So oranges, you know, the property, you know, symbolically it's about, you know, abundance. It's about energy. So, and if you think about an orange and the smell of an orange, it's very potent and cleansing, citrus. So we might do an orange clearing in a room maybe that hasn't been used. So I might suggest that we, you know, 9 is a significant number in feng shui. So we might take 9 oranges or 9 tangerines or something like that, or lemons, and peel them. And use the peeling, and maybe we'll put them in a bowl. And you can do a couple of things. You can like boil that and add some cinnamon. Cinnamon's very powerful additive in terms of cleansing a space. And then you can place that in that room, in that space, and just let the aroma kind of help to clear that space. So, you know, you would do the same thing as if you went into a room that was stagnant and you'd spray the room with air freshener. It's no Febreze. Different than that, but the way that we're Febreze, yes.
But natural.
This is more natural. And yeah. There's an intention behind it. And so you would kind of do that. And it actually has the properties needed to cleanse and absorb the negative energy. And then you would just discard that after a while. And then the room is like cleared and ready to be reset. So that's an example.
And so what's cool about that is the idea that it does not always have to be like as a designer. It's not always something that we have to design into the space in order to accomplish it. It's that yes. It can be actions or behaviors that we take in our home, which really then goes back to that idea of we are creating spaces that people are going to live in and grow in and change in, and we don't necessarily. We don't have to, as the designer, be responsible for all of the things. And it's like all the hopes and dreams of families right. Do get loaded onto us sometimes. And it feels good to have a little bit of an emotional appeal to some of that, to say, wait a minute, this is also going to be you as a family or as a home doing some things differently, you know, with yes. each other. I think that's a cool idea to think about too.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the misnomers sometimes when you think of feng shui. It's, oh, I don't want to hang red lanterns in the room, or I don't want, you know, that sort of thing. But that's a very fundamental kind of misnomer about it. And the thing about feng shui also is you can look up a lot online and do some, you know, kind of search, and they'll give you some good tips and topical types of things that you can do. But to really go to a deeper level, you really need someone who's studied and can help analyze and bring a lot of tools so that it takes it to a whole different, you know, depth and level. So sure. That's what I like about the power.
Yeah, because I do think I'm just thinking about my own home right now. There's one room that we just don't use and has just like never felt inviting and whatever. We've had it as a guest room, a playroom, and now it might be my new office. So, but I'm like hesitant to make it my new office because it's kind of like dead feeling.
Yeah.
So that is like an interesting way to approach the space of, okay, it's not just the wall color. It's something else that we need to figure out.
Yeah. I think that's you've keyed right in. So you already know that that room kind of has a dead feeling. So just that knowledge and understanding is the beginning of things that you can do just on an intuitive level right. to start to
and I'm like
shift
scared
that.
To move my desk in because I don't want it to now feel gross when I'm in there. I mean, I'm like, I'm sensitive to this stuff too, but obviously don't know what I'm talking about. So it does interest me to learn enough to feel like I have a way to approach these spaces when that happens.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I just need to peel some oranges, you're saying.
Start with some oranges. Enjoy those oranges too. Yeah. There's a great book out from one of the teachers from the school called Mindful Homes. And I think you can get it on Amazon. And it's by Angie Cho, A-N-J-I-E-C-H-O. It's a wonderful book. I use it as a reference guide, and it's very easy to understand. She really highlights all the main areas of a home. And you might want to think about checking that out, because she does spend some time talking about the office and things that you can do to enhance. And it's really nice because it's probably things that you would probably have already done, but then she gives you a little bit more of that, again, the reason behind it and what you can expect that that can do for you.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll add it to show notes. And yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out, because I just feel like a lot of homes have a room that just becomes like the junk room, or like the room that no one wants to go in. And
yes, I think there's
a variety of reasons why that can happen, like improper storage, and maybe the color is weird, but yeah.
We always talk about, especially in January, you know, it's like decluttering and how big that is. And it's almost like to the point where it's like, it can be anxiety ridden. Oh my gosh, I feel like if I don't do a decluttering, then I'm somehow failing. But there's so much more to clutter than just like a bunch of stuff, you know, stacked in a room. But it's, you know, there's a resistance sometimes to it, and really thinking about, why am I not getting rid of things? And what I like to suggest to clients who might have clutter in space is to, in a way to not get overwhelmed, is just start with, moving nine things and do it for increments of nine. So just start with nine things for 9 days, and just let that be the thing you do. So, and once you have shifted or moved those nine things, pause, because it keeps you from getting overwhelmed, but you're still making progress. And it gives you a little bit of space and distance to really think about seeing the space shift and change as you start to move these items. And then you can add on another 9 days, whatever you feel comfortable with. But then that's an easier way, I think, to approach, decluttering a space that doesn't overwhelm.
Yeah. Or once you get started, maybe it'll click in and you'll get going and it'll keep going.
Yeah.
I love that.
Maybe you'll feel more motivated.
Well, yeah. Like, I started doing that in that room, and now I'm down to probably the 9 things I don't want to deal with, and I need to just force myself, partly because they're big, like furniture or something, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I love this approach and thinking through it of ways to like also apply it to our businesses and finding ways to have more conversations with our clients about how the spaces are feeling versus just like our intuition, which some clients aren't just going to trust that.
Yeah. I think that becomes a skill that you kind of start to develop. It's really kind of through the questions that you ask in your questionnaire and sort of your consult, you really start to tap into getting at their personality type, how comfortable they are, how open they are. And then you can kind of go from there. And then you'll also know really quickly who isn't into it at all. And that's fine. But, you know, for example, I market that on, that's on my website. And so I have to feel on some level that they're coming to me because they have seen that. And I do ask them about that. So have you seen that I'm into feng shui, and how do you feel about that? And have you had experience? And, you know, most of the time they've seen that, they're intrigued by it. Like I said, curiosity is really key. It's, if you have a curiosity about it, that means you're open-minded about it. And so it gives us a way to kind of start the conversation. Go from there. So, absolutely.
Let's take a break to talk about Mo's home collection.
Mo's just released their 2024 spring and summer collection, and it includes 300 plus new intros, and they're calling it their tailored and timeless collection.
Yeah. When you go through the lookbook, there's all this like new sort of like vintage and then European and some really like classic shapes that have been updated. It's some really new stuff that it's like very different.
Yeah, I got the link and I sent it to you and I was pretty impressed and blown away. Not that I haven't always loved their stuff, but it's so unique. Hello, they're using color on their furniture fabrics, which is just seems to be impossible to find lately.
Yes. Yeah, their design team definitely leveled it up. There's some really cool creations that feel like elegant, but inviting.
And I think that term tailored is perfect because there's some like beds with skirting on it. Just really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. The pleated skirt chairs. Oh, my God.
Yes.
So you guys are really good.
They're box pleated. Yeah, they're so cute.
Yes. So if y'all are going to be at Market, either Vegas or High Point, it's definitely worth making a stop at Moe's showrooms. They're beautiful and they've got tons of the pieces there when you get to Market.
And if you don't have an account, you can register at moeshomecollection.com/HYDC.
Now, I know that we haven't talked a lot about this but I know that as this rolls, are you mainly I don't know what your company looks like. So is it mostly you having a lot of these conversations with clients? It's very direct and you're...
Right.
They're very personalized conversation, right?
Yeah. You know, so I'm an independent interior designer, so I wear a lot of the hats in my business. I bring in...
Same.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm learning to be a lot more, I need you to help me do this. So I'm bringing folks in as I really kind of need it. So I call it like ad hoc teams based on project needs and such. Sure. But essentially that's what I'm doing. So I'm the one really kind of having the conversations with the clients and to really kind of get at the core of what we're going to be working on for each of my projects. Yeah, absolutely. Questionnaire is really key, I think, and the types of questions you ask. So, you know, in addition to, you know, what rooms are you thinking about? What's your budget? What's your, you know, those types of practical questions that are important. Then I start to get at, you know, now I'd like to ask, you know, a series of questions that are related to feng shui. And so answer as you're comfortable. And, you know, if they leave it blank, that also lets me know, you know, so okay.
I don't want to talk about this.
They don't want to go down that road. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. And, you know, you have to think about, I'm in the Midwest too. So we're not early adopters here per se. So I have noticed that I've had consultations and they've been from folks who have found me, but they've been on the coasts. So there's part of this idea is, you know, what I feel like part of my role is to get the word out and really kind of use myself as kind of a beacon about this practice and get more people kind of interested about it. So I've been thinking about, you know, it'd be great to do some sort of workshop about it just to introduce people to the concept. And, you know, I spoke last year at a trade show and it was about, you know, feng shui for the bedroom specifically, because I felt like that was something that was going to be approachable. And it was pretty interesting. There was very, like, everyone seemed to really find it fascinating. And so I have people coming up to me asking me about, so if this is what I have, you know, should I do this? So there is definitely, I feel like there's definitely an interest here. So it's really about making sure that people can have a way to find me and we can have that conversation. So,
Oh, that's so interesting too, because they're like feng shui curious. They're just like, I don't know. I had a friend in college who did feng shui and they're just like, okay, yes. Girl. But they don't know and they need that natural curiosity. They might not seek it out, you know, among friends or if they have someone they know who's redecorating their house or doing a remodel, they're probably not going to bring it up, but they're curious.
Right.
And they, you know, they saw it on an HGTV show. So it is good to sort of bring it into the regular part of popular culture and let people know that they can ask more questions and find people who do it because I'm sure there are other designers who know the principles. Maybe they're not niched, but they're just, people don't want to hear about that. So I'm not going to talk about it. But they're by putting it at the forefront, I can also do this. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my first business coaches recommended that I not start with it. Don't lead with that, she said. And I thought, oh, okay. Because I was like all gung-ho about it because I felt like that's going to really separate me out. But I understand what her intentions were. And then I also understand you it's an interesting topic where you don't want to just kind of blaze out the gate, you know, start, you know, talking about it. Because it is still, for Western culture, it's still a little bit unknown. And so anything that's unknown, it's like we tend to shy away from it. But
I think it got a bad rap at some point. I don't know exactly why, but I feel like it got thrown in with magic or something like people.
Well,
like,
you know, there's a mysticism. Yeah. I've heard that word kind of associated with it. And, you know, depends on, and then you clash that with like religion and, you know, people kind of put it into that bucket of, ooh, it's not something that I feel like it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, me, or I don't think that it would work or something like that, you know.
And but or definitely related to like Asian style of design, which became a thing for a while that people were like, oh, but it's really, you have to have Asian inspired interiors in order to do feng shui. Exactly. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
No, they're separate things.
Separate.
Yeah.
And I do think there's examples like putting, like I was talking with the office, but like sleeping with your bed under a window and your pillow just like to the glass feels really strange. If anyone's ever done that, like it just doesn't feel right.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
most people would feel that, right?
Right. I mean, it's, or did you have a good night's sleep? Sleeping with your head under the window? You know, that's just a very practical thing. You know, no, it's like, it was drafty. So then you have to kind of correct for that. And so
felt unsafe.
Yeah. It's, you know, and that is part of it. It's like your animal brain is telling you, it's like you have to be on alert. And that's part of the idea. It's like the more that you can sort of create this idea of a mountain behind you, and that's actually what a headboard is. It's really acting as that firm support. So I will say, if you have no other option but to put your bed against the window, just really make sure that you have a really firm and supportive and maybe taller headboard. And then that's going to give you that support and give you a sense of safety. So you can have a full night's rest if you must put, you know, your bed in front of the window.
Yeah, because some windows, that's the only, I mean, some rooms, there's only like one option to do things.
There's only
like
one,
you can't walk in the door.
I know, as you know, I'm working on a project now. And the, you know, the architect, I was brought in after the floor plans were all done. And I was kind of talking with the architects, you know, could we think about maybe shifting the door to the other side? Because it would just be more optimal. But, you know, I'm trying to, as I can, you know, think about before we commit to floor plans, you know, looking at it through that perspective so that they can bring me in before they think, oh, now we need to bring in an interior designer now, you know.
Yeah, I was going to ask, have you been able to do that much? And especially that map you're talking about, I could see that.
Oh, yeah.
Really, you need to be able to be involved in the beginning if you can.
Yeah. Yes. And I can, you know, I can apply it at any point in time, but I think optimally before things get set up, it's best to kind of have that conversation if possible. And that way you can kind of explain why you're thinking that door should be on that side. Because, you know, it's not just because you want it there, you know.
And people need time to like think about the priority of that for them too. So it's so hard with the pre-construction phase too. Everything is ambiguous at that phase. Everything is sort of not really fully realized. And so, you know, usually there's these unlocked ideas where you could still make changes. And then there's the stuff where people are like, absolutely no, 100% the kitchen must be at the back door because we're going to entertain, or, you know, they've created a couple like sacred cows that they don't want you to mess with.
Right.
And then you have to navigate
and
a few other things that you're like, I know, I love this journey for you, but I want to show you maybe there's another way. There's some other options we might be leaving out. And sometimes they're responsive, sometimes maybe not, but you can try.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt to make suggestions like this.
Yes. And you know, the thing is, you know, think about a new build and a remodel. So you have to make more adjustments and for a remodel because it's kind of set versus a new build. You can kind of start from scratch. So it's kind of like that where you just kind of have to see the space and you have to see what you have to work with. And the thing is, there's so many different ways you can make adjustments for things that are odd or off or something like that, that I'm not necessarily daunted by the fact that, you know, gosh, I wish, you know, we could have put this in the center. We can figure it out. And so that is something that I really feel like is important to mention about feng shui. There's so many different ways. Yeah, exactly.
But a lot of it does overlap with quote unquote good design. If you're looking at a set of plans, and this happens a lot, the architect maybe didn't think of where the bed is going to go. And we don't want it half covering a window off center on a wall. Like where the feng shui opportunity is probably the same as where a designer's first choice would be where the bed would go. So being able to implement that and have reasoning, I think would be, how do architects handle it though? Are they like, okay, are they open to it? Do you have good
partners? So far it hasn't been, embraced per se. They tend to be, but you know, I keep at it as well. Maybe next time. You know.
But that's what you're brought in to do. Like the client usually knows that you're doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's usually how it will actually shift, is if the client is into it and they understand it and you're talking to them, then you can probably get things shifted and changed versus just going straight to the architect, you know, sometimes. Yeah. So, yeah.
The buy-in of that, like we're the, but I feel like we're often that role for a lot of clients of, I mean, I don't know. I know there are designers out there who are working with very creative, very design-forward architects. I would say that I am probably less in that bracket of clientele right now, where the architect is just this wildly inventive, world-class, you know, home architect. Creator. Yeah, and it's usually because there's limitations on budget or lot size or what, you know, you're reworking existing stuff. So, yeah, it's different because we're often, as designers, brought in to be the creative to save it or but make it look better or make it look not builder grade or how do we do this, but maybe with something more inventive. And sometimes we're the unicorn and we can help do that. And then other times I'm just like, yep, it's just gonna, we're gonna put some lipstick on this and that's as far as we're gonna get.
And
I feel like that's generally the role that a lot of us are taking, is we're going to come in and sort of influence things as much as we can behind the scenes and move the needle wherever we can. And it's always like a tiptoeing kind of, hopefully not on eggshells, but tiptoeing through, keep preserving everyone's ego a little bit and making people feel good. It's like the therapy side of what we do.
Yeah, it is. It is totally that. For sure.
When you said you bring in an ad hoc team, what do those people look like?
So
like
I work
not actually
with,
what they look like, but what type of what is their role?
I know, okay, so I will bring in an architectural drafts person. I work with my go-to sort of rendering guy. I will bring in, well, you know, it depends on the project if I'm recommending a contractor. So it's all of those key players that I kind of need so that I can kind of stay in my lane as sort of the creative director and kind of the first face to the client. I wish, you know, if anything, I wish I could bring in someone to be the bad cop, because that's my challenge, because they hire me.
The project manager?
Yeah. Yeah. So I end up being that. But that's where I should focus a little bit more of my time. But yeah, so it's all the parts and pieces that really move the project kind of forward are the folks that I kind of bring in.
Yeah, I feel like we've been talking about just this idea of more freelance project managers to come in and be the heavy sometimes. And
oh my gosh, I want to get in on that chat, because yes, right? No, it's, you know, the thing that's most challenging for me, and I think from my corporate background, where you always have to be diplomatic and you have to kind of work in teams and all of those things, it's good and bad, because I find that I am always the diplomat. And sometimes I just need to be the ass, you know? And so I have a hard time with that. I really do, because a client hires me because of, you know, design, talent, all of that stuff. So then when you have to have the tough conversation, that's when I have a little bit of a tough time transitioning into that. So I've been kind of working and talking with my coaches and even some of my other designer friends about, what do you do in such cases, you know, where you have to play backup? It's like, oh, I bring so-and-so in and she does that for me. Or I haven't, you know.
Is it more for bad cop with the client or mm-hmm. with contractor? Yeah.
It's mostly with clients. Contractors, I'm fine. I mean, you know, we're speaking the same language. And so that is just, you know, that's always kind of probably been our work relationship from the very beginning. We've kind of established that. But for clients, it's, you know, it's just a little different for me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just my...
I struggle with it.
It's hard to be the heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think Sean probably struggles with it less.
He's
good at being direct.
I don't have a problem being direct or being the heavy or doing that. It's the... Can I preserve... It's like that navigating. Can I preserve that relationship, that mm-hmm. sense of yeah. I'm still trying to be helpful, but I've got to do, mm-hmm. you need to hear this for a second. Yeah. And that's hard because that's just how relationships are. It's not everybody, mm-hmm. especially, you know, they're not my family. So they don't have to stay with me after this. Like they're not part of this, but
yeah.
it's hard when it's shorter term. Like in my mind, what we do, even if it's years of a project, it's shorter term. And I don't want to have to do that like heavy conversation in the first like 3 months when we still have, you know, 16 months ahead of us and right. I've damaged that.
Yeah.
But you also are playing this, if I don't say it now, it's just going to get worse later game. And mm-hmm. I think that's really, I get hung up of, okay, is it bad enough now? Or, like how lightly do I give my warnings on mm-hmm. a project? Or, hey, I hear all these dreams about what you want the space to look like, but realistically, that's not what your budget is showing. So give me more money or, mm-hmm. or what?
Change
or
your
what,
dream. You know, it's, change your dream.
Yeah, it's sort of, I do feel like I don't like being the dream crusher. And that's the part that keeps getting harder mm-hmm. is I just want to have realistic limitations and boundaries we're working within. Mm-hmm. And if you tell me the sky is the limit and the budget is also the limit, you know, there's an endless supply. Great. You know, but
yeah.
one of my architects said to a client, he was really good. He said, I really love all of this, but I do have to tell you that I'm not in the business of creating designs that can never be built. And I think we've crossed into that territory. And the client was like, it felt very easy. It didn't feel insulting. It didn't feel rude, but he was just like,
yeah,
these are really great inspirations. And I love this. Mm-hmm. And if you tell me there's enough money to build it, I would love to design it for you. But he really made it about, I want you to have, it wasn't about him. It was about like, I want you to have what you want and I can give that to you if
and
you tell me there's these other factors.
And we all want this job to be finished. I mean, I think that's something that we all are frustrated with. And this happens like a lot recently is I just feel like I can't cross the finish line because whatever, maybe it's me, but clients aren't letting me get across it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that should be the goal is we all want to finish the project.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And sometimes you kind of got to maybe be like, I know, I got to figure out how to be tougher on some of those. Because I've tried the vetting and I'm doing better at that, but mm-hmm. there's only so much you can vet. Like situations arise that you just need to stand up for yourself and your work.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is we're all on this together for better or worse.
Yes, let's hold hands. Let's clear the space with some oranges.
Yeah, I need more oranges. I'm
doing. Oh my gosh.
I know we're not going to leave. We're not going to leave with that. And I know, Will, you mentioned that you have some exciting things coming up. And it sounds like you're a part of, it's a new show, right? The Midwest Design and Furniture Fair.
Yes.
And that's coming up this May, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Thanks for letting me just kind of chat a little bit about this. So it's the Midwest Design and Furniture Fair. We had a soft launch last June at a convention center here. And it was a two-day event. It was open to the public. And what we found out was that 85% of the attendees were actually design professionals or design industry related. So this year, we are actually making a three-day event. Two-day will be trade and 1 day will be open to the public. And we're moving it to the downtown Kansas City Convention Center. And it's going to be May 9th through the 11th. So it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And, you know, I always tell the story. When I transitioned from corporate out into, you know, the design world, because that wasn't where I had sort of come from, I was in corporate. It was very insular. I just really didn't even know, like, where do I go? Where are the showrooms? Yeah. Who, how do I connect? And it took me, you know, a few years to really start to build a network where I felt like, you know, I could pick up the phone and call like someone I know that I trust to be an upholsterer or, you know, those services that I really need. And so I was just thinking, gosh, if any other independent who's entering the space, this would be a perfect platform because then they can dial right in and get set up in their business and just, you know, be more successful more quickly. And so you could shave off all the time that it took me. And so when the co-founders of this event kind of were looking, because they saw the opportunity in the Midwest, because if you think about it, I mean, we've got High Point on the East Coast, Atlanta, and we've got Vegas. And, you know, Chicago is kind of its own little ecosystem, as is Texas. So we're in the middle here, and there's nothing here. And so I feel like honestly, I feel like if you can be a designer here, then you can be a designer anywhere because you're really going to work hard. And I think part of it is I want to elevate design. I want to make sure that we have access to the brands and the resources that both coasts have. And so, and I think as we're seeing, there's a lot of people moving into the middle and there's a lot of movement into, you know, from the coast, they're migrating for different reasons. And so if we don't have the resources and the skills and design access that they're used to, well, guess what's going to happen? They're going to bring in those their designers. Yeah. And then where does that leave us here? And the other piece is I felt like one of the interesting findings from last year was that there were a lot of students that attended this. So they had convoyed from, you know, their schools to attend this event. And so it got me thinking, wow, they're going to be speccing product in a couple of years. So how great is it that you can have this captive audience and really introduce your brands to them up front so that as they start to enter into the profession, they'll already have, they'll know who you are. So all of these things are, was kind of the impetus behind this. So we really want to build something incredible, exciting, that's sustainable, that can grow. And we have partnered with ASID. And they are actually helping to create a competition. So we have a student competition, and then we also have a professional competition. So the winners, you know, will get scholarships or, you know, two tickets to Maison this fall. And,
you know, what are you competing? What are you doing?
So it's really entering. The competition is a design competition. So you can enter any of the projects that you've had over the last, I don't know the years, but it's certain categories. So it's a design competition. And the criteria is different for the professional than for the student. But essentially, it's a, the judge is through the ASID platform. So they took care of a lot of that for us. But we've expanded and we're bringing in a lot more, you know, national brands. We're also
Are there local makers and stuff too?
Yes. They're going to be local like furniture makers. What we found last year was that there's quite a bit of furniture makers here and they just, you know, this was a great outlet for them to present. And so to create something like that where the goodness was really between, they spent a lot of time getting to know each other. And I know like they actually like created projects in amongst each other. So creating the community. And creating a way to kind of do business in a more of a centralized way. Because we're not, you know, like a design-centric type of place where, you know, you've got a, you know, like a Chicago or Atlanta where you have a design center. So this sort of becomes the beginnings of that. And then you can really create a sense of community that will continue to expand and grow.
Yeah, I love that. Because I'm in an area that's similar. Like we don't have any design showrooms or... We have to go to San Francisco, which is like, it's like a whole day to go. So I love this. Let me know when you guys are going to start having franchises.
Oh my gosh, right.
We need to.
Yeah, we're excited.
It's to come to other cities.
Yeah, well, there's a Design Edge, I believe, that's kind of... Have you guys attended any of those Design Edge shows? I think there was one in Houston last year. And there was one in Miami. Mm-hmm. So it's a concept. It's a show. It's a type of trade show concept where it kind of travels. We were looking at that model to see, you know, is this too similar? But we feel, you know, there's just, we just need to kind of concentrate and focus on creating a hub here in the Midwest. And so we're excited about kind of planting roots. And, you know, we were talking in the beginning about the momentum that Kansas City has right now. And I think that's only going to continue. You know, we've got the World Cup coming. I mean, we're at the new airport. We've expanding our light rail. So there's so much that's happening that becomes sort of a beacon for bringing people to this area. So I'm like, let's ride this wave as high as we can.
Absolutely.
So I've invested some of my time and effort from my design business to kind of roll over into investing time and effort to, you know, really give this it's due so that it can be successful. Because it's kind of like, you can't do this for a year and hope for success. I mean, you've got to be in there for the long term. So it's at least a 3-year. Yeah. And so the owners, you know, and I, the founder, co-founders, we've been kind of working and talking about how do we, you know, make sure that we continue to expand year over year and grow. So yeah, the Midwest Design and Furniture Fair, May 9th through the 11th, Kansas City Convention Center.
Yes, all you hotties in the area. I know there are some. So
yes,
I'm going to be watching and seeing how that works.
Yeah,
we don't have anything like that here.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited for sure.
That'll be really cool to see the connections that people... I mean, you're going to be there, so you get to see it. But I mean, we just get to sort of see it from our perspective of seeing designers kind of building community with each other. And we know firsthand how valuable that is to being able to grow, to adapt, to just not feel as isolated. So I think that's going to be fantastic for so many of the designers that are there in the Midwest. And if our hotties want to find you, where should they follow you?
Oh, so yes. So I'm on Instagram. That's kind of where I'm mostly... You'll find me through Will Brown Interiors on Instagram. And my website is Will Brown interiors.com. And then if you want to, you could go to mwdaff.com for the Midwest Design and Furniture Fair. We check out their site. There's a ton of information there. You can see a lineup of speakers and vendors and activities and get involved. You know, reach out to me or reach out to the contact that's on that website. And yeah, get involved. Find out how you can attend. If you want to be a vendor or exhibitor, you know, we're definitely looking at all of that. We've got some exciting national brands, Benjamin Moore, some furniture brands, Classic Home. I mean, we're excited. So we're really thinking about big.
Fantastic. Yeah,
we will link all that up in the show notes too.
Awesome.
If anyone's driving and listening and can't
in the carpool, and it definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, this has been fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being with us and for being so generous with our fellow
hotties. Thank you so much, Will.
Who are listening.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And now you guys are going to KBiz, is that right? You have a panel or something?
Yes, yeah. We are hosting a panel. Are you going?
I'm hoping to get out there because one of the exhibitors is going to be Thompson Traders, and they're doing a big thing out there, KBiz. So we might go out there too. Check that out. So this would be my first KBiz because I haven't been out there. So I'd have to make sure I connect with you guys.
Yes, please do. Get your comfy shoes too. Yes.
We'll be there on the last day.
Oh, the last
Thursday. We're there on the last day. And I know some people are like, I hit the first days and I leave. So I know it's kind of a weird overlap, but we'll be there. We're getting in Wednesday evening and then we'll be there on the, you know, a full day on the Thursday kind of doing our thing. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to catch up. If you're there, send us a DM.
Okay. I shall.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
So, and you got it. So until next time.
Stay hot, designers.
Thanks for listening to the Hot Young Designers Club podcast.
For more on what we talked about today, check out the show notes.
Your support helps us grow, so share with your design besties.
And subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
Our conversations continue on Instagram.
And be sure to download our monthly resources on our website and our Patreon.